Welcome. This is It Could Happen Here Daily. This week, we are focusing on different ways to actually start doing things. You know, we've talked a lot about ideas, and we made some broad recommendations, and had people on to give specific insights into different things. But we're trying to focus this week, and then more in the future is like, if you're brand new to this sort of thing, how to actually start doing stuff. And one of the things we talk about a lot is almost everyone we've interviewed has mentioned this at some point, that trying to get more active in the things you're consuming and the things that you're eating. And one of the ways to do that is by just literally growing your own food.
Mm-hmm.
When I was growing up, my grandparents operate. They used to operate a large farm. Now they operate kind of like a farm that just feeds them. So whenever I'm at my grandparents in Canada, usually we just eat all the food they grow, whether that be like produce. They also do their own hunting. They make their own sausage. They preserve meats. So I kind of grew up around this type of thing because just how self-reliant some of my family is. But not everyone may have this kind of background. And so, this idea of growing your own food can feel maybe a little bit daunting. And to help us talk about food and then eventually soil and other kind of things, I have invited a guest on from another kind of podcast that operates in the same rough framework, I would say, probably.
Sure.
Of how to kind of slowly improve the world. Do you want to explain who you are and what your project is?
Sure. So my name is Andy. I'm the host of the Poor Pearl's Almanac. We're a podcast that's focused on thinking about after collapse. How do things like climate change and collapse impact things like food systems? And what can we do today to prepare for what's coming in the future?
Yeah. Feel like it's not a coincidence that all of these different kind of projects are getting more popular around the same time, because we're all looking at the world and being like, huh, this doesn't seem very sustainable.
No.
So we better start figuring out what to do when all these systems kind of slowly, start losing parts. I want to talk about kind of food today. I want to maybe branch off into a few different directions. Plant pun. Branch off into a few different directions, both what do you do if you have your own house and yard, or maybe you're more rural, you have lots of space, and then also kind of the inverse of let's say you lived in a cramped city apartment, different things that you can do. Let's probably start with the rural, just to give a more base background on,
sure.
You have more of a standard setup for what you're able to do. If someone's never grown anything before, they've never, maybe they've had one house plant, but they never grown anything, what do you think is the best first preparation steps before you actually, go and start buying seeds and stuff?
Sure. So when it comes to growing food, it's really not that complicated. Chances are, if you have a front yard, we're talking about someplace that's pretty rural, assuming the climate isn't someplace super dry, you're generally going to be thinking about growing food someplace where grass probably already grows. So if grass is already growing there, things can grow there. And really that's as simple as it can be. It can be more complicated. We can start talking about things like soil pH and nutrients and all of these other things. But really when it comes down to it, if you put a seed in the ground and the temperature is not too warm or cold and it gets rain but not too much rain, the plant's going to grow. And if you've got some, say, couple acres and you want to cut out a little section of it to grow some food, that's as simple as it really can be. And you can go to whatever store and buy seeds. So that's a good place to start. And obviously, depending on where you live, you want to think about things like lead in the soil, if you live mm-hmm. someplace near an old house, or mm-hmm. maybe if you're near someplace where there was manufacturing. And one of the things to keep in mind is that a lot of older settlements, even if there isn't a factory there now, it's very possible there was a factory 50, 100 years ago. It's been demoed and you never even knew it was there. So it's really important if you do live in some place that has that manufacturing background or an old house to really check for things like lead in the soil, because that can be really dangerous.
And there's very accessible soil testing kits available at
Absolutely.
Stores and online. Okay.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, I think $15 you can have a soil sample taken and
yeah,
you can find out everything that's in it.
You can also find out like the pH and, you know, if it's too acidic and things like that.
So yeah, you figure out you want to start growing stuff. You have some space, whether it be like a front yard or maybe like an open field if you're lucky. What kind of stuff do you think, you know, should I just jump in and buy any kind of seed that looks fun, or should I like start with specific things? I don't know. It's like, if I really like potatoes, should I just go to potatoes? If I really like cauliflower, should I just do cauliflower? What's kind of the, if I'm brand new, what's the different things that would be worth first trying out?
So generally speaking, you really want to think about what your climate is. And I think that's one of the things that gets missed a lot of times, is you want to grow things. So like, I live in New England. Growing, say, watermelon is really a challenge in a lot of ways, because you have to think about the length of my season versus the length it takes for a watermelon to be a full-sized fruit for you to eat. So depending on where you live, the one thing you need to keep in mind is what that length of your season is. Now, to get back to the main subject of the podcast, talking about things like climate change and collapse, that season is changing rapidly. Right now, we're adding days, so the seasons are getting longer, but also we're having weird cold snaps later and later into spring. So what might have been a traditional season no longer really applies anymore. So if you're thinking about this is your first year, you don't want to grow anything that might be right at the cusp of being in your season, or you don't want to start a plant inside and then have to move it outside, and you have to know whether or not it has a taproot and all these other things to make sure that you don't damage the plant, then you definitely want to grow something with a shorter season. Things like cold weather plants, lettuces, broccolis, cauliflowers, things like that will generally do pretty good in short seasons, but they don't really do well in really warm climates. So if you're in, say, Florida, it's going to be really difficult. But that's kind of how you want to start thinking about those processes, learning what the cold season plants are, what the warm season plants are, where you fit in terms of the zone that you live within. And again, starting to think about, okay, the last couple of years, when did we get the last frost? Because it's not what it might say 10 years ago as your average last frost. Those days are pretty much gone.
I know here in Portland, we're currently growing a lot of potatoes, and that's been kind of our big haul. Also, tomatoes did very good this year, particularly because of our big heat domes. Tomatoes did so much better than what they usually do. We've like canned so many tomatoes, just because we have so many more than what we're used to. But I do find that interesting, being like, you know, climate change obviously being generally a net bad, but you know, in some cases for growing, it's going to make certain crops easier to grow, but you know, other crops will be harder to grow. That's something I wanted to talk more about in the first five heavily scripted It Could Happen Here season two episodes, is like particularly how different growing regions are going to shift up, and how, like, you know, Canada, for instance, is going to have a lot more agriculture in the next 20, 30, 50 years, just because so many climates are slowly inching upwards. But, you know, even in places like Georgia and other places where specific plants are growing, all that stuff's going to be changing. Obviously, this is affecting coffee and how we're getting less and less space and land that's actually able to grow coffee, because basically growers have to move their plants up a mountain every year in order to make the coffee actually work, which is why we're just gonna run out of space. That is obviously the more negative sides of things.
And in California, lack of rainwater.
And just lack of rain. Absolutely.
Lack of rain, yeah.
Absolutely. And that brings up a really important point that, you know, you're talking about moving the coffee trees further and further up a mountain. As the areas that are considered prime agricultural areas moves north for us, you have to think about the infrastructural challenges that brings. So it's not just you're going to grow the crops in one place, but the infrastructure, the trains, all these different things don't exist in the places where you'll be able to grow those foods.
So speaking of something, you know, around that rough kind of idea, is like, if someone's never done this before, they're out to go get stuff, where would someone like that find seeds? Let's say that they don't use the internet tons Whereabouts will you think they'll go and get cauliflower seeds or carrot seeds if they want to start doing this stuff?
Yeah, so there's a bunch of different growers that offer seeds. And one of the things to keep in mind with annuals is that it does make sense if you can to buy them locally, because what within a couple generations, plants will start evolving towards local conditions. It's really beneficial, especially with, like I said, with climate change, start thinking about how can we integrate our food systems into the ecological conditions where we live? And that ecology includes the climate. So we have to continuously more thoughtfully start thinking about these things and how we grow food and where those foods come from in order to really be able to deal with and mitigate the effects of climate change. So a great resource is Johnny's Seed. They do a lot of really good work, and they have good quality stuff. And there's a bunch of seed companies out there that have done some really problematic stuff that I won't go into or talk about, but these guys, as far as I'm aware, are pretty good. So I would definitely recommend them.
Awesome.
Yeah, their website is just johnnyseeds.com, just for everyone who's looking that up, and it's Johnny with a Y.
Good for Johnny.
With a Y.
With a Y, yes.
With a Y.
Great. All right. Let's say someone lives in a downtown apartment in a metropolitan area. They don't have immediate access to, you know, tons of dirt or, you know, grass, but they want to start kind of growing some stuff. If you were in that position, what would you start doing?
And to that, I want to two-part that. That would be somebody with a balcony where they have access to, like, even like a little patio area.
Yeah, and or without. Those,
and then without, yeah.
Sure. So there's a bunch of different things you can do. Starting with, if you have a balcony, you can start thinking about getting pots, filling them up with soil, amending that soil as needed as you add plants. And again, the general rule is to think about how big a plant gets, and how big a plant gets is how big its root system is going to get. I mean, that's not 100% accurate by any means, but it's just a good rule of thumb to think about as you're doing something like this. And, you know, if you have a tiny pot, then something that gets big is not going to work. Might be better for a lettuce or whatever. And there's a bunch of different places you can look online for how to grow things on balconies and things like that. You can also, and this is really dependent on money, is start thinking about things like grow lights, which really are not that complicated once you start learning a bit about them. Hydroponics, which comes with their own challenges, because at the end of the day, while it's nice to be able to grow food in your house, you're still relying on extractive processes. Mm-hmm. So, you know, your nutrients are coming from fossil fuel, essentially. So that's just something to be aware of. It's probably still better than the alternative of buying food on the shelf, but it is something to be aware of in that process, that it's not really a sustainable, quote unquote, practice.
Got it.
And what are some of the go-tos for a balcony garden that you would recommend for people that are just starting out?
Definitely those leafy greens are a good place to start. They grow small. They have smaller root systems. Most times things like lettuces don't need a ton of sun to grow super well. As long as they get a decent amount, they'll be fine. They're not like a tomato that's going to like be desperately looking for that sun and that energy. Mm-hmm. So those smaller greens are generally a better option.
Great. Yeah, I was able to grow kale in like a pot this winter, and it was great.
Yeah, kale's a great one. Here in New England, it's really nice because you can grow it under glass during the winter. So even if you get a cold spell, it'll stay just warm enough to make it pretty much throughout the winter.
That's awesome.
All right. Now, I have no balcony. I only have, you know, two small windows. You know, I have like a counter and stuff. You know, I can set up stuff, but I do not have tons of outdoor access. But I would like to stop buying dill every time I go to the store, because I use it in my homemade ranch dressing. Now, can I just buy those like pre-potted stuff and just water them? Or can I get like, if I like want to get more in depth, what are the, you know, some things that are beyond that, but not, you know, making this giant setup?
So you could be creative and do something that's less than 100% legal. And there's this practice known as guerrilla gardening, guerrilla agriculture.
I was going to mention guerrilla gardening soon, yeah.
Sure. So this is like something that works really well. And there's a bunch of different ways you can do it. And it really depends on your local conditions and what can grow out in the wild and needs a lot of maintenance and what doesn't. And I don't know the Pacific Northwest that well, but it is warm enough that I think dill would probably do fine, and it is wet enough that dill would probably do fine. So you could just go anywhere where there's green space that nobody checks things and just drop some plants in. You could start seedlings in your house and bring them where you want to harvest it later. And if it's on your walk to work or where you get coffee or whatever, drop it in the ground. Make sure the roots are, you know, not bound up, and make sure it's got a nice water drench right when you put it in the ground so it starts adjusting. And that's, you know, that's the first step in something as simple as guerrilla agriculture.
One of the first things that we tried to do when I got kind of started in, you know, the, you know, Portland's kind of more lefty scene was, you know, ideas for, you know, building a community garden somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, because there is just a lot of dirt, especially like Portland's specifically lucky just because we just have so much green space. There's a lot of places to start guerrilla gardening, to start doing your own little community garden. Do you have any alleged experience in guerrilla gardening?
Yes. So if you're on Instagram, I post a bit about some of the guerrilla gardening stuff that I do. I generally focus on guerrilla gardening, not necessarily for my own consumption, but more for ecological mitigation for damage from clear cutting and things like that.
Yeah.
So I go out and try to plant things that are native to regions and try to bring them back a little bit. So that's one of the challenges that we see here on the East Coast is not only are our cities not really designed with green space in mind, and for like community gardens, I almost never recommend them just because in places like Boston, they're hard to get into. And a lot of major cities, like you can be on wait lists for years. So that's not really a short-term solution or a solution for a lot of people that are rather transient where you might move communities every 3, 4, or 5 years.
Sure.
So like guerrilla gardening works really great for those folks because you can do it when you want and how you want.
Nothing says community like a wait list.
Right.
No, but like in terms of community gardens, I think, you know, there's been a lot of people asking about how they get involved in mutual aid and stuff, especially if they don't have like friends or like they don't have like many friends or connections to activism. I think one of the best ways to start anything like that is just all you need is like yourself and maybe one or two other people that you know to just start a community garden somewhere. And that's a very, very nice on-ramp into like community organizing.
Absolutely.
Back in Portland, when I used to live in the Southwest, there's just whole like community plots that are like, you know, more like official, but still pretty like decentralized, that you could just basically go up to one of the vacant plots and just start planting food in this community setting. And like once a month, all of the different gardeners would like get together and talk about what they're growing and stuff. And they could, you know, could trade produce, be like, I'm growing pumpkins. You're growing butternut squash. I want one of your squash. I want one of your pumpkins. Right. You can like that kind of stuff. Or if, you know, if you end up having like a larger haul, you could just give it out to random people. Turns out people might like receiving fresh produce. That could be another way of making friends and making connections. If you're kind of isolated in a city and you only have one or two other people, you can start a new community garden somewhere in the city. So like scope out a spot, start growing.
Yeah.
And
to speak to that, you know, one of the things is that if you act like you're official and you're supposed to be there and you know you're supposed to be there, people generally don't really question you, especially when it comes to plants. Like if I go to like a median and go plant some trees, like as long as I act like I know what I'm doing and like don't look like I'm trying to be sneaky, no one ever questions me. And that's the key thing, is to really make it clear that like you know you're supposed to be there.
Whenever I eventually I'll put together an episode on like urban stealth and stuff, and there's nothing more powerful than like a high-vis vest. Just
an
incredibly powerful tool for making people glaze over you and think you're a professional. It's amazing.
Yeah. Or in this case, like when I'm doing what I do, you know, I'll borrow someone's old beat up pickup truck and throw a couple of big trees in the back. And like, you see that pulled over on the side of the road with its hazard lights on. Nobody's going to question that it's like a town or a city. And if somebody from the town shows up, I'm from the DPW or whatever.
Yeah, it's incredibly useful. And yeah, but like, getting to know, you know, if you're like, I don't know where to find a local, you know, I don't know how to, like, where I would pick a local community garden spot, be like, you should, like, get to know your local area. It's another great way of figuring out how to start doing any mutual aid or anything. It's like, you need to know where you live and, like, what's around you, who others, who, you know, maybe on your search to find a community garden, you might find one that already exists. If you're unfamiliar with your, you know, if you're in a metropolitan area, or if you're more out in the middle of nowhere, you may not know what's around you. And I mean, looking out to see what's actually in your community is one of the first big steps to have any kind of...
And that plays out also in ecology. So, you know, if you're in a city, most cities have public forests, parks, whatever it might be. And part of not knowing what's around you, or knowing rather what's around you, is starting to identify the plants that are already around you. And while there's been a lot of action in terms of thinking about things like foraging, there's a ton of opportunity for us to start looking at foods that we don't traditionally think of foods, but produce a ton of calories. So something like oaks. Oaks are across the United States. I don't think there's any state without oak trees. And acorns can be a huge part of anyone's diet if they're willing to take the time and learn about them. And that's not something that's radical or anything. It's something that's been done for thousands of years. It's just in our lifetime, in our parents' lifetime, that knowledge and that experience has been mostly lost. But it's not something that's weird or inaccessible or any of those types of things.
Absolutely. I think this is actually a decent cutting off point for this episode. And then in the next episode in the feed here, we will focus more on ecology, focus more on soil, and maybe get into like permaculture and some other kind of stuff. Just, I would love to learn more about, you know, specific soil stuff and, you know, different, you know, more insight to our current like growing situation overall as like a country and how, you know, stuff is changing. But would you like to plug anything related to you or any other like resources on this topic before we head out?
Absolutely. So we are a podcast. Go check us out, poorproles.com. or Spotify, wherever you're listening to this podcast, you can go check out some of our work. We're also on Instagram and Facebook like everyone else, and you can go follow us over there.
Fantastic. If you want to keep up to date on stuff for this show, you can follow Cool Zone Media and Happen Here Pod on Twitter and Instagram, and you can catch more It Could Happen Here daily in this feed. See you tomorrow. Bye.
It Could Happen Here is a production of Cool Zone Media. For more podcasts from Cool Zone Media, visit our website, coolzonemedia.com, or check us out on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can find sources for It Could Happen Here updated monthly at coolzonemedia.com/sources. Thanks for listening.